Welcome to Supply Chain Now, the number one voice of supply chain. Join us as we share critical news, key insights, and real supply chain leadership from across the globe, one conversation at a time.
Hey, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Scott Luton and very special co-host, Dr. Mudassir Ahmed, all with you here on Supply Chain Now. Welcome to today's live stream. Mudassir, how are you doing today?
I am doing very well, very well. This is a sunny day in Birmingham. I'm doing fantastic. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. We're still getting a break. We got 127 degree weather coming soon, wow. But we've had such a nice extended spring. So it's been gorgeous. But folks, today is The Buzz, where every Monday at 12 noon Eastern time, we discuss a variety of news and developments across global supply chain and business. News that matters is what we like to call it. And The Buzz is powered by our friends at APL Logistics all month long in June. APL Logistics is a global supply chain logistics provider specializing in order management solutions operating from 180 locations across 93 countries. To learn more, visit APLlogistics.com. Okay, Mudassir, we got a lot of stuff to get into here today. We're going to be talking about the power of decision-making optimization. We're going to be discussing a few of the latest examples of how AI continues to transform supply chain work. Speaking of AI, we got to learn from the successful AI projects as well as the ones that fail, more on that. And we're going to be revisiting a few 2026 predictions to see what sticks and what didn't stick, all that and much, much more. And as if that's not good enough, in about 15 minutes or so, we're bringing in a special guest, Anthony Reeves with Kohler. He's also quite an author of a great read we're going to touch on. You're going to enjoy Anthony's invigorating perspective on the power of leaning into being uncomfortable. So Mudassir, big show here today. Are you ready to go, my friend?
I am super excited. I think the agenda you've sent me is right up my street, especially the profile of Anthony is super impressive. We need more branding expert in supply chain because, as you can see, we moan about how people don't care about us. So we need a branding PR expert to tell us how we can improve our PR within the organization and outside in the world.
So true. We got to tell a better story. Yeah. I'm looking forward to getting your take on all these topics here today. Folks, Trish is already hard at work. She's dropping the link to our friends at APL Logistics. Go check that out. Alan Jacques is back with us. Hey, he says, Scott and Mudassir. Alan, look forward to seeing you in Atlanta soon. And Maria's back from Madrid. Maria, I'd love to get your take on some of these topics we're talking about here today. So let's dive in. We've got a big show here today. Let's start with, we've got four things we're going to hit before Anthony joins us, Mudassir. I'm going to start with our latest edition of With That Said, which published over the weekend. We lit off with a very high-level summary of three recent articles published to our resource hub. And we pointed out how they converged on a key central theme: better decision-making. Yeah, we've been talking about it forever. We've made some progress, but we got more work to do. Because whether we're pursuing a safer working environment, the better leveraging of data and AI, or preparing for massive growth ahead, the teams that optimize decision quality are most likely to be in a better position than those that don't. And as we talk about regularly, hey, the human workforce doesn't have to make all the decisions these days. More and more, we can offload tons of decisions and make the tech do the work. So in this edition, beyond those great reads, you're going to find a bevy of tools and resources and some terrific live shows. Give it a read. Let us know what you think. Now, Mudassir, I think you're still dwelling a bit on our previous edition where we talked about the quantum era. Is that right?
Absolutely. I think this was the first content I have seen in the quantum leap, which is very surprising because a night before I watched a channel called Think Big, right? So there was a professor, I forgot the university, a Japanese professor, and he was talking about how quickly the progress had been made in quantum computing. And if I put it simply, quantum computing is not done in digital one and zero. It's done at the atomic level. That means the world's most complicated problem, supply chain is one of them, would be, I think, is there to solve, right? So we have seen the exploration, the age of AI. We're going to talk about that more, but what's going to happen with quantum computing, it will be the leap in, I think, 100x or 200x. But all of that brings it risk and challenges, which you have rightly mentioned in the With That Said article. And you have mentioned some really good quotes and some good research, some experts in the article, which was a very, very good. And thank you for sharing with me.
Hey, you bet, Mudassir. That's high praise coming from the one and only Dr. Mudassir Ahmed. So folks, Trish is making it easy on all of us. She dropped a link right there to the most recent edition of With That Said. And It's even easier. You can go back and check out all of our previous installments, including the one on the quantum era, because it's an exciting and a scary time all at once that we're entering.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay, let's see here. One other thing I want to call out that was in this most recent edition. So folks, Paul Delbar is a good friend of the show, and he's launched a terrific new series that centers around a fictional grocery store known as The Corner Market. It's a blog series. I'm trying to think of the platform it's on, and Amanda and Tricia helped me out. But I've read through the first five chapters, and I love the blend of business, leadership, and personal observations that Paul writes about. So I want to invite you to check out The Corner Market and let us know what you think. Okay, so Mudassir, I want to go back to AI and tech and all this stuff. You know, you work with all sorts of supply chain leaders around the globe. I think you've got a very unique perspective and point of view. I checked out, of course, a lot of your keynotes and your podcasts, which I'm a big fan of. I'm curious to get your take on the topic of how you see AI continuing to transform work, especially supply chain roles. What are some of your thoughts there, Mudassir?
I think I would say three things, and both strategy, tactical, and execution level, right? There is the progress made within the supply chain tech firm, and I do a lot of emergism work like yourselves, you know. My mission is basically bring the problem and bring the solution which can solve that problem in the supply chain tech space. There's a lot of tech available. I don't want to name any companies, but for example, I was collaborating with Project 44. We recently met there in collaboration with them. So they have run a pretty smart decision intelligence platform. In fact, we have built a full curriculum of courses that people go to Singdujo and learn how the agents are really transforming logistics, visibility, execution. So the tech is there. Now, the question is, what I see in industry right now is, which is a strategic challenge, is the adoption of it, right? And it's a strategic issue because I think there's a desire from supply chain folks and leaders to do it, but it sits at the company level. Let me give you an example. So Sensei, which is our AI supply chain business intelligence and execution layer, which we'll talk about more later, we pitched to a company. The chief supply chain officer really liked it, but to get it approved, it went to a CEO, and the CEO said, hang on a minute, let's hold on. Yeah, it makes sense, but I want to look into the AI strategy for the business. And I'll get back to you when it is available, when we come back, you know, when we think about it. So while the supply chain AI and the desire is there and people see the benefit, but at the strategic level, leaders are still not very clear how to go about it. And they have security concerns, they have compliance concerns, and they have, of course, have people concerns to go with it, right? So that's the strategy part. Now, at the tactical and execution level, it's basically the hype needs to match the expectation, right? At the moment, it's not matching. That's fact. I know all the CEOs and founders like me who's working in AI will say, no, we're going to come in and we're going to save 80% of time in you creating your RFPs using AI augmentation, and it will not take 8 to 12 weeks. It's going to take, you know, 4 to 6 weeks. It's possible. But to make that possible, or they make that very specific use case possible, someone within that organization needs to sit with it and run the change management. So there's a debate of, don't treat AI as a project alone, right? It should be embedded in the business. It's not straightforward. I mean, you just want to buy a simple HR software for people to sign up for your holidays or recruitment, right? It doesn't happen because it needs to go through three or four layers of approval from all the way to the end user, up the way to the, you know, CTO compliance officer. So we have to realize that change management and manage it along with the push, right?
Yep.
And what I would recommend to the leaders and the users who wants to adopt AI is, be more willing to put time and effort in the adoption, right? AI is magical. It can do fantastic stuff. And this worry and this narrative of supply chain will, okay, AI will take over jobs. I know I'm going against everybody, or even there's a CEO of Microsoft AI. He mentioned that all the blue collar jobs, 98% of them will be gone in 18 months. I think he's totally wrong. That will not happen. With every technology you've seen, starting from manual to paperwork to the fax machine to the internet to mobile to digitalization to cloud to right now, what happened is humans adopt that technology,
right?
And they get better with time. So the people who might lose the job who are not adopting, they're waiting and seeing. Don't be the wait and see person. Be the early mover. Adopt your use case, and you will become invincible, not for your job, in fact, for the organization.
I like it. Learn and apply. Raise your hand, volunteer, work on these new initiatives. But whenever we stop learning and we stop educating ourselves and stop developing new skill sets, hey, we're in trouble. And as Mudassir said, don't be the wait and see person. All right, so good stuff. I want to offer one last thing. We're about to bring on an outstanding guest, but Mudassir touched on something that I believe is a great opportunity and resource folks out there. So, folks, you got to check out Sensei. Dr. Mudassir Ahmed spent 4 years building SEM Dojo into the world's largest independent supply chain learning platform. Get this, 82 practitioner-built courses, 44 best practices, enterprise programs at some of the world's most successful companies. All that goes into and really fuels Sensei, right? It's what all that knowledge becomes when combined with AI. So SEM Dojo AI Sensei is a new powerful platform that offers supply chain pros tremendous support in a wide variety of ways. And hey, just wait, there's more. Mudassir's got a great offer, offering Sensei for a special limited time, $49 a month, but it expires July 1st. So you got to act now. Mudassir, did I get all that right, my friend?
You will get absolutely spot on. Nothing to add.
Okay. All right. So folks, go check it out. We're dropping a link right there in the chat. So speaking of great, great stuff here today on the June 8th edition, 2026 of The Buzz, powered by our friends at APL Logistics. We've got a great guest. So get this, folks, from the Australian outback to global stages, Anthony Reeves has spent 3 decades leading brands, teams, and transformation. In fact, he led Amazon's advertising business from $1 billion to $20 billion. Goodness. He's also served as vice president of global brand and creative at Kohler, and through WPP worked with brands including Airbnb, Nike, Verizon, and Microsoft. He is well known as the strategist that tells companies what AI is doing to their moats and helps leaders navigate change and growth without losing what makes them distinctive. He's also published a great book, which we're going to talk on in a minute, Eat the Donkey, Why Great Companies Embrace Discomfort. We're going to learn more about the colorful title in just a moment, but please join me in welcoming Anthony Reeves, Vice President, Global Brand and Creative at Kohler. Hey, hey, Anthony, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great, Scott. Yourself?
I am doing fantastic. I tell you, Mudassir's got us all charged up, ready to go on this Monday morning. Mudassir, we've had quite a start, huh?
Yes, definitely. Anthony, very impressive profile. I must say the introduction from Scott was brilliant, but I want to give you 2 compliments to get things going. First of all, the name is brilliant. I'm sure you're going to explain. And the second part, your reviews, even within the first 2 months, it's fantastic. So being a fellow author, right, I'm also writing a book, which I scares about getting good feedback. So many congratulations, getting really great reviews.
Really appreciate it, Mudassir. Thank you very much. As you know, as an author, it is a labor of love.
Yes. Labor of love, indeed. Well, all right. So let's do this. A little fun warm-up question. Now that we've exchanged pleasantries and jumping right in, folks, today is many things. We have World Oceans Day. Every day needs to be that day, I think. We've got Eat Flexitarian Day. Interesting. Thomas Paine Day here in the States. And it's National Best Friends Day. So I want to dial in on that last one, Anthony and Mudassir. I'm going to ask you both, starting with you, Anthony. Who is one of your go-to buddies that has been there for you through thick and through thin? Your dire ride. Who is that, Anthony?
That's almost like the impossible question. So there's one person that immediately comes to mind, and Peter Scriven and I have been friends for decades. He is back in Sydney and he lives there now. We have climbed massive mountains together. We've hiked, we've solved problems together. We've gone through, you know, marriages and hard times, and we've sea kayaked through massive swells together. And I think even though I don't see him as much as I should, without a doubt, if I need something or need to talk to somebody, Peter Scriven is a person that I always go to.
Outstanding. Big shout out to Peter. Thanks for being a great friend out there. The world needs more great friends. All right. So Mudassir, same question. Who's one of your go-tos?
So I've got hundreds of people in my connections, right? And my WhatsApp is full, but there's only, unlike Anthony, I've got 4 or 5 friends which I call. And my definition of friends is that you can pick up the call anytime and they can pick up the call at any time and they're there for you. So I've got a friend called Kashif. He's in Canada and he's very different from me. He's very creative, right? And he's there to talk about personal stuff, professional stuff. And he's, because he thinks very differently, he's always giving me a very emotionally intelligent perspective on personal life and work life, right? And he's very bad in execution, so I compliment him because I'm good in execution. So big shout out to Kashif. He has been a great friend all my life. Known him about, I think I was like 13 since I know him. So more than 3 decades. It's amazing. Good God.
You can't make old friends. That's a tremendous, valuable friend of yours there as well, Mudassir and Anthony. Good stuff. And I will give a shout out. And you know, it's like picking your favorite kid. It's not a fair question. But I do want to give a shout out to my dear friend Tripp. I caught up over the weekend, a.k.a. Catfish. He's been around a long time with me and always appreciate his perspective and his stories. All right. So really quick, before we dive in with Anthony and with Mudassir, I want to call out a couple things here. Number one, I mentioned the Corner Market. Go check out that series, folks. It's a really easy but interesting read. And also, I want to make sure folks see the link for Sensei, which we touched on earlier, that Mudassir and his team have published. Great resource here. And then finally, LK is back, the pride of South Georgia. Great to see you, Larry Klein. Hope you're doing well, my friend. All right, so Mudassir and Anthony, let's see here. We're going to go through three stories and get y'all's take on these stories. And we're going to start with some caffeine. Reuters is reporting on what Starbucks is doing and now not doing with AI. And as Reuters reported on, the coffee and retail giant had rolled out an AI program called Automatic Counting to its North American stores about 9 months ago. That was really meant to help fix the chain's persistent product shortages, right? CEO Brian Nickel, I think I'm saying his last name right, thought these shortages were a big part of the sales slump that they had been experiencing up until that time. Essentially, it was an app that attempted to help improve Starbucks' visibility and accuracy into what was causing the shortages, such as miscounted inventory or mislabeled products. Automatic Counting also attempted to eliminate manual work associated with inventory management. Who likes cycle counting? I do not. Some Starbucks employees commented that while they appreciated the intent behind Automatic Counting, it was failing really in its execution and results. So Starbucks announced last week that a program was being terminated and they intend to, quote, standardize how inventory is counted across coffee houses as we continue to focus on consistency and execution at scale. One last thing before we get Anthony Mudassir's comments. Brian Nickel, the CEO and the leadership team at Starbucks, is making some progress overall in their efforts to turn the company around, including sales growth and stock price gains this year, up, I think, some 26%. So, Anthony, my thought is we got, whether it's AI or not, we've got to learn from the projects that work, the initiatives that work, and we've got to learn maybe even more from those that don't. Your thoughts?
Yeah, so firstly, to Starbucks, you've tried something. It didn't work. They're moving on. It's a kudos to them and the decisions they've made to move on from that. And, you know, coming from my background, even you think of Amazon and the decisions they've made over time that have failed, you learn more from that. So if you remember the Amazon phone, for example, or Amazon restaurants, they failed miserably, but they made the hard call to try something and then cut it off. And there's a great saying at Amazon, which is treat everything like a two-way door. That you can go through and see what's on the other side. But when you hate it and don't like it, make sure that you can always turn around and come back. And Starbucks have done that really well.
I like it. And of course, Amazon, they've really nailed the art of pilots. Big fan, lots of experiments. I love it. All right, two-way door. Mudassir, when you think of going back to the Starbucks app that they've recently shelved, or just the bigger picture of learning from those that, things that work and those that don't. Your thoughts?
I think, as Anthony said, well done for Starbucks for trying it. And I think that shows a lot about leadership desire. But because I'm an engineer and I'm a tech guy and go through the technicality of the things why I think fails. But if you read through the articles and do the further search, what it appears is, let's call it the issues on cycle counting, or basically the technology not recognizes the different bottles or missing, you know, the product in front of the lens, is more down to the physical side of the architecture to work. So let's call it, you know, more that AI plus Internet of Things, right? And this technology, I think, will improve with the, you know, period of time. Let's think about, you know, Google Glass was failed, but now Meta and other people are doing it. So while it feels right, you know, failed right now and the people are not happy, I'm pretty sure at some point in future, it will work.
Excellent comments to you both there. And Trisha has dropped a link. Go check it out, folks. Don't take our word for it. Give us your take.
Quick question. Do you think it was a human problem that it didn't work or a technology problem that it didn't work?
I think based on the research, it more look like a technology problem, not reading the product labels correctly, not differentiating between milk and a coffee box.
And also, folks, if you go check out the article, as I understand it, it was built on basically the team members holding a laptop or a tablet to take a snapshot of their inventory. Mm-hmm. So it was really, I love the ease and the functionality that they designed it with. However, maybe the technology wasn't quite there, or to what we said earlier, maybe user error. You know, user error, huh? Couple quick comments here. Again, folks, go check out the article. Vishal says, hey, AI doesn't fail because of technology. It fails when execution, process design, and operational realities aren't considered. Great reminder that transformation starts with process, not software. Alan says, fail fast. I like succeed. Perspective. And finally, Larry Klein, LK says, nothing beats human familiarity with the inventory. This allows the employees tasked with using it to monitor the AI tool. Stuff. All right. Lots of Starbucks fans out there. So we got to move to this next story. We got so much to get to here today. Everybody, you know, I don't know about y'all. I love prediction making, and then I love to revisit said predictions. So here's a blog article from our friends at Forkites that offers up four predictions for 2026. Now, I'm going to hit these at a high level. I'm not going to do it justice. You ought to go check out the original blog article. But I'm going to ask Anthony and Mudassir which of these predictions may have been most accurate so far as we almost hitting the halfway mark of the year. So here they are at the high level. Number one, agentic AI will thrive in the enterprise, but consumers will have to wait, as in due mainly to security concerns. You know, we aren't giving AI agents unrestricted access to the open web and our credit card details when doing things or doing research on things like making travel plans. Number two, someone will finally ask the uncomfortable questions. Now, this is a bit of an interesting one. But for an example from this prediction, some supply chain organizations want AI to optimize inventory. We're just talking about it. But at the same time, they keep separate P&Ls across various functional aspects of the enterprise, right? So the question is, what do we really want to do here? Thirdly, generic AI tools will lose to purpose-built solutions. And then finally, soft skills will matter more than ever because as the article shares, quote, as AI handles more routine tasks, the demand for interpersonal and organizational skills, emotional intelligence, creativity, and critical thinking will skyrocket, end quote. All good thoughts that are interesting to ponder. So, Anthony, of those four, which prediction do you think has come to fruition the most?
It's interesting, Scott. As you're going through the list, I was writing a few notes down, and I thought I had my answer down, but when you got to number four, which is soft skills will matter more, it is the one that I do believe will lead into more as the 2026 continues and 27 into H1 kicks off. There's a couple of early indicators already, not so much in supply chain, but definitely in social media. We're seeing a big change in social media at the moment with a lot more AI in there. People are actually turning away from AI. And the soft skills, especially when you're interviewing people, are going to become a lot harder, but they are the biggest skills to interview against.
Well, so I agree with you, Anthony. Mudassir, of those four, which one do you think?
I think I would have picked what Anthony picked because I think in universities and these days, they're talking about power skills because of the age of AI. So power skills are there, right? But I'm going to pick the second one, the ROI question. The recent example that Microsoft has stopped using Claude because the cost of tokens was actually more expensive than humans. And even though the IPOs of OpenAI and Claude is coming soon and SpaceX, but at some point people are going to start, okay, we got this and hundreds of thousands of budgets. Are we seeing the ROI, right? And then I think the CFOs will kick in and they're going to say, show me the ROI. I think that will happen pretty soon.
Well said. I agree with you both. And that one about asking the uncomfortable questions, that probably wasn't as much of a prediction as talking about the newer uncomfortable questions that we need to be asking. I think that's very accurate, right? I think it's very accurate, especially given all that modern technology poses here in the golden age of supply chain tech. We've got to keep it real with what we really want to do with said technology. All right, so folks, Trisha's dropped a link there to that blog. And I think this is my friend, Andrew. I think this is Andrew. Says, do you think we get dazzled by the outcomes and blind to the reality? By the way, Starbucks coffee isn't coffee. All right, quick comment.
On that quick one from Andrew, I'm really curious about the question because the question is interesting. So Australians, firstly, are very precious about their coffee. So I'm just going to put that out there very quickly. And so the one party totally agrees where Starbucks isn't quite the quality of coffee like in the UK or Australia,
right,
for example.
Right.
Is Starbucks a seller of coffee or are they a coffee shop?
Interesting.
And that will affect supply chain, will affect the customer service, will affect Andrew's question dramatically. And being around Starbucks a lot, and because I spent a lot of time in Seattle, they want that third place, that coffee shop experience. And they do that through coffee.
Yes.
And that's where there's a really big, really big point in the difference in there and how they go to market or how the supply chain works and what you want your staff to do if they're scanning bags of coffee. But they want to have that coffee shop experience. It's two different things altogether.
I think it's a great point. And Andrew's a great question. Mudassir, really quick, your comment.
first of all, I'm not a coffee drinker, so I'm indifferent in that. So I probably won't be able to add a lot of value in this. So sorry for that. Yeah.
It's okay. That's all right. Hey, there's tons and tons of takes on coffee, and then you blend coffee with business, and it's fascinating. But
I will add one thing, though, because I go to the coffee shops with colleague, drink, I think, cappuccino, if nothing. But the experience of Starbucks as a coffee shop, I definitely agree with Anthony, is not for me. It's not for me. It's not good.
Okay. Yeah. Fair enough. And it's been evolving. It's been evolving, to be fair. All right. So we'll have to leave it there. We're keeping our finger on the pulse. It's fascinating to watch their continued efforts to turning the business around. All right. I got a couple of comments. I'm going to come back to those. Good stuff today, Vishal and Andrew and others. Let's get to this third story. So speaking of great friends, this is Paul Noble there in the middle, me and him talking a couple of years ago. He released a great article, I think, in Forbes and focuses on key takeaways from Gartner Supply Chain Symposium 2026, the gift that keeps on giving. I'm going to share a couple of nuggets, and then Anthony and Unisera, look forward to your perspective here. First off, Gartner research shows that 94% of supply chain organizations want to integrate AI into their operations, or they want to bring it in, yet only 17% have done so at scale. First question I think it begs is, what the heck is wrong with 6% of folks that don't want AI? But that might be a different show. Separately, Paul references a popular keynote at the event and writes that AI agents need supply chain data that is different than the human-centric data that has been prevalent for years. AI agents need data that's connected and contextual and continuous. And then one last nugget that I find interesting is a lot of stuff here in the article. Paul cites KPMG's new report, Risk Management and Resilience Emerge as Key Concern for Supply Chain Leaders. And in that research, 73% of businesses are said to be planning a comprehensive transformation of their supply chain operating model within the next 1 to 3 years. That 73% data point is up from only 11% just a year prior. I find that to be very fascinating. It's also one of the common themes that I heard at Gartner, that the winners in the current golden age of supply chain tech won't be those with the most AI. Rather, it's those that combine a variety of things such as trusted data, faster and more successful decision-making, and use all of that to create new operating models in supply chain and elsewhere. So there's a lot here. But Anthony, your thoughts?
Not really sure how to. There's a lot of questions in there. So firstly, my point of view is going to come from the enterprise level and the yep. enterprise level only. It's not going to come from a small business point of view. It's definitely the larger scale. And the first one is, you know, AI needs inputs and needs information. And if your data is not clean, your data is not consistent, and your data doesn't work across the board, like why start implementing AI when the output is we're so reliant on the input. The first point you talked about was only 17% have had success with AI programs. Is we need to think very closely about the reasons why not. Mm. And I'm a huge fan of looking at organizational structure and how teams move forward. So at the most basic level, if you want to buy an AI tool, does legal approve it? Does security approve it? Does IT approve it? Does procurement approve it? And in the past, those teams have been all very, very separate. If you're at a group level or an organization level and you want to implement something incredibly basic from an AI point of view, you have to go across to all those four individual departments to get approval. That is really hard and takes a long time. Also, our organizational structure systems are built very much on a matrix team. And you have dotted lines here or the very, very deep organizations. And they're incredibly cumbersome and incredibly slow. Where AI and technology move very, very fast. So we're putting our teams in this real tension point where they're being asked to use AI and asked to move really fast. But the organizational structure or enterprise unit is incredibly slow.
Mm.
So I was going to be very Australian there for a second. But so the annoyance factor of it is frustrating the team. So all they do is behave. That's too hard. Right.
Anthony, you point out some really interesting observations there, especially with what I'll call velocity differences in different parts of the organization. When we're moving at an overall business velocity, which gets faster by the hour. Mudassir, your thoughts on Anthony's comments or the article in general?
This is my favorite topic. I speak on this. I can speak on for more than an hour. So it's very hard for me to say that what I know based on my recent research in 2 or 3 minutes. But I'll tell you one very important point. You use the word context, right? So the way what people are using is enterprise data, what they think is, okay, we got too much data in ERP systems and other systems. Let's connect with the large language model, and then large language model with some engineering will work. and give us the output, what we need, and inferences and process mapping and data mining, what do we need? It will not work. And let me tell you why it will not work. This keyword of business context, and that part is important. There's a concept called RAG, Retrieval Augmented Generation, which is almost the basis of what we have built for Sensei. Let me give you a very small example to explain the point I'm making. So you could, for example, you got a lot of inventory data or purchase order data. You can drop that Excel file to your Claude or you to your OpenAI or Copilot, whatever you're using, and they say, analyze and give me the forecast, give me the spend analysis, or give me, you know, change of safety stock. It will do it. It will do a pretty rubbish job. The reason it will do rubbish job for two reasons. It does not have the context of your vertical for pharma, for aerospace, for oil and gas. And secondly, it does not have the expert knowledge. We call it skills in AI. Like any human engineer, you got to train your large language model like a supply chain consultant or the procurement consultant. So that's what we do at Sensei, right? You can drop Excel file. We have 187,000 documents we have used using RAG to train the Sensei to think like me, like which have a 20 years of experience. And therefore, the business context gets established and AI makes sense. So this 70% number will not grow faster unless organizations learn how to teach AI that business skills, the vertical skills they need for their specific output for the agents. Because agent is nothing but some kind of human who's going to work on input and output, as Anthony said.
I tell you, I, for one, wish I could think more like Mudassir and Anthony here. So you are operating above my pay grade. And we're going to have y'all back. And we could talk for hours probably on just this last article. But yeah. I appreciate y'all's comments. And we're going to keep driving because we got a lot more good stuff to get to. See, I'm going to bring in Vishal's comment just really quick. AI outcomes will only be as good as the underlying data. Right. Governance and data quality need to be strategic priorities, not afterthoughts. Man, Vishal's coming on strong here today. Okay, before we dive into this next segment, we're about to learn from Anthony's journey and some of his leadership journey as well. But I want to share a resource from our friends at APL Logistics. I love checklists, folks. I love checklists. A good list. Amanda does too, and she'll probably own up to it here in just a second. Our friends at APL Logistics published a neat read that focuses on five signs your supply chain has outgrown how it's managed today. I mean, if you've got the national champion Indiana Hoosiers football team, we can't manage them like a peewee football squad, right? Well, check out these. That might be a bit of a stretch, but check out these five things. Let us know what you think. And hey, reach out to our friends at APL Logistics who can help you delight customers and unleash your supply chain's full potential. Okay, Anthony, me and Mudassir are dying to dive deeper into your perspective and expertise here today. And I want to start on a bit of your background. I touched on your background when I introduced you, but I think it's a lot more important that we expound on that a bit. Would you please share a few anecdotes from your upbringing, especially given its connection to your book, Eat the Donkey, Why Great Companies Embrace Discomfort, which we're dropping a link to. Tell us about your background, Anthony.
Yeah, thank you, Scott. I grew up, you know, spending immense amount of time in the Australian outback, and you know, we've all seen Instagram and TikTok stories about it. I say generally they're pretty accurate. I grew up in an environment where the nearest store or the nearest gas or petrol station, depending where you are in the world, was like thousands of kilometers or miles away. And you really had to plan and make a lot of progress and to consistently move forward. And with the learnings from the outback, the harshness and the loneliness, as I went through my career and moved to some of the larger boardrooms of the world, those lessons really carried over. And those lessons really did me well. There's a lot about independence. There's a lot about stubbornness. But the most important is about progress. And having that sense of progress for me is really, really important. One of the biggest lessons, and I don't think it's written in the book. Well, I know it's not written in the book, is I remember, you know, as a family, we pulled into a fishing hole or a dam in the outback in Northern Territory once. And her dad was setting out camp. I sent myself and my brother off to go fishing for the night and to go fishing so we could eat food for the night. Mm. And with that, we went and cast a line. The mosquitoes were horrible. They were probably, you know, an inch long and they'll be bitten everywhere. And we weren't catching any food. And this is a bit of a problem when you try and live off the land as much as possible. And about 30 to 40 feet down, there was a First Nations person. who grew up more independent than we were. And he started laughing at us, not because we were a couple of white kids that were fishing, is because we were fishing entirely the wrong spot. So he dragged us down 30, 40 feet. We cast a line, first catch, we caught a fish, and, you know, the usual story after that. But the biggest lesson for me wasn't about the fishing. It wasn't about anything in that direction. It was really about the ability to learn. And you will pick up learning from everybody in life. It doesn't matter who they are, whether they're a doctor or they're a rocket scientist or they didn't graduate high school, you're guaranteed to learn something from everybody. And that's the one thing that stuck me through my entire life.
Anthony, I love that. And folks, I want to share, we've shared the book. We're also dropping the link, Eat the Donkey, Why Great Companies Embrace Discomfort. We're going to touch on what he means about that attention capturing title in just a second. But Mudassir, I love his key point he made there, because we really can, if we're not humble enough to make sure we can learn from everybody, from every walk of life, no matter what they've done or haven't done in their career, then I don't think we're looking at the world right. What are your thoughts, Mudassir?
No, I absolutely agree with the story and the sentiment here, right? And with the, again, we're talking about technology and AI. What is getting more important here is the human, emotional intelligence part of it. You know, I recently heard the story that there's a company called Chewy who basically send a hand-painted, oil-painted picture if the pets pass away. It's because they just want to create emotional connection, right? Because that's the only thing we do. And the danger of, if you call somebody, I think I just recently called an Oracle office for some reason, and it was like 9 different options. And after that, I went to an agent, and I'm thinking, I just want to talk to a human, like, please.
Right.
Okay. So it's annoying as well. So I think big companies, basically, and even small, they need to find a way to create this human connection, because eventually humans buy from humans. Give your credit card to AI. You're going to regret it.
Yes.
Yeah, that Chewy story is such an amazing story, how that as a big brand who relies on so much supply chain and just-in-time supply chain management, truly understand that moment that matters of a pet owner. And when your pet passes away, they've realized that that's a big moment for you. And they've realized from a marketing point of view is how to be there for somebody. And it's a phenomenal way the way the brand does that.
Yep.
I know we're constrained of time. I have to ask this question to Anthony, because I think I'm dying. Being he's a brand, let's call it champion. He knows how to build big brands, right? So if you have to give one advice to, let's call it, startup owners, right? How to create, and the problem with technology is you have to set technology, right? But we just talk about human connections. What they have to do to build that human connection and build the brand along with it. So
Mudassir, that's an excellent question. I'm going to back up for a second, because I think what's important for folks to take Anthony's response to your question is if they understood a little bit more about his professional journey, because like you said, he's worked for some brand leaders, industry titans. So from that corporate leadership perspective, Anthony, share a little bit more about your background, your current role, and to Mudassir's question, if you had one tip for folks out there.
Yeah, so from high school and then college and then onto my career, I grew up as a creative person inside a lot of the world's largest advertising campaigns. And I hope that you've seen some of my work in the past in Super Bowls or Grammys or areas like that. And I've been very fortunate. I had a lot of people that have taught me and haven't had a lot of patience. And as my career grew and I grew further forward, I ended up moving into Amazon for a long time. And from that, sort of helping Airbnb reemerge through the pandemic, just now really close to bankruptcy to the point they are now. With that, and with the lessons I learned from the outback and to the largest brands, I've really become to appreciate there's only a couple of things that truly matter for a business and that you need to anchor yourself towards. We touched on this a little bit with Starbucks earlier. If you think about what Amazon is as a company, and we know how big Amazon is, like 1.6 million employees globally, their anchor point is not about technology. Their anchor point is not about retail supply chain. Their anchor point is not about AWS and being a great cloud company. They are at their core business wrapped around customer experience. Everything they do evolves around that. And I was so fortunate when I joined Amazon, our neighbor across the way, Tom, is a remarkable human being and just a great storyteller. He was employee number 5 at Amazon. And he can really tell me the stories of when, Jeff's desk was a door taken off the hinges and how customer experience affected Amazon at that point when they were just selling books, or the offsites that they did to improve the customer ordering system. So it did capture your credit card information, because Amazon invented that one-click ordering and the capture and the credit card capturing. But it's all based on how do they improve that customer experience. Another example that we know well is Kodak. Is what business is Kodak in? Because were they in the film business, or were they in the image capturing business? And they optimized towards the film business, but they're really in the image capturing business. The move is here, going back to your question about what makes, you know, any small founder think about it, is like, at your very base level, basics of all level, what do you want to be known famous for? And Airbnb is all about belonging, and Amazon is all about customer experience. You know, Starbucks is a coffee shop experience. Kodak thought they were one business, and they were actually were a different business altogether. And I believe that foundation of the core, that one thing you can drill it down to, is really important. And even from a personal point of view, like if you think about yourself outside of your family and your friends, like what's that one thing that you want to hold true to who you are and what makes you strong? A company is no different from that. And that's the foundational level, the foundation of what a great company will stand at.
I like it. All right. So for the sake of time, we're going to be moving fast, Mudassir and Anthony, moving real fast. We've teased this enough, though, because this phrase, Anthony, when I saw information on your book come across in a message to us, I'm like, eat the donkey. What the heck is he talking about? Anthony, tell us more.
Yeah, so my wife and I and a great friend, Nate, battled for a long time over this title. And with the title, we're talking about foundations as an individual or as a person has been the core theme. And we kept coming back to the fact that as a family, there are times when we had to eat donkey to survive. Mm. And everything was so remote. There's stories wrapped around cattle stations and trying to find food. And the only piece of food left is what they feed their dogs. But we had to find food and protein in a way that kept us healthy to make that hard decision so we can go on and do something else. And I believe we're in an environment now where as a big brand and big enterprises and even small ones, we're not willing to make hard decisions anymore. We're not willing to say, if we make this hard decision now, it's going to be better off serving us down the road later. And even from an Amazon point of view, is Amazon will sacrifice short-term revenue for long-term gain. They will make hard decisions about missing dollars or missing money, so they'll live for longer in the long run. So in the outback, we made the hard decision eating donkey, and it sucked. It does not taste like chicken in any way. But I'm here to tell the story about it today. And a lot of companies will dive into a revenue pool because it's an easy decision, or will optimize something because it's an easy decision. But in the long run, that easy decision is actually going to put you out of business.
Well, and that is not an appetizing. There's so many aspects of what you shared that's not very appetizing. Anthony, I'm not throwing stones, by the way. I love your humility with how you have taken your upbringing and shared it with folks that are trying to navigate their own challenging times. And by the way, my copy is on the way by Amazon. I wish that in the next week or two. Mudassir, react to what he shared there, especially as we tie it back to the title of the book.
I think absolutely right. If that is the message, if that's what you want to send, it's fine. I mean, I work for industry 17 years, and I think the difference between, let's call it, agile startup who make good decisions, hard decisions, and grow faster, and the innovation lacks or the it's like some big companies, it's decision latency. And they're not making hard decisions. They got so much data points to make a decision. So by the time they arrive to a decision, the data point they made the decision are already obsolete, right? Mm. And they just can't make that decision, and then the whole cycle starts. So they're not just not making the hard decision. They're not just, the decision latency is too big. And that's the same goes for the AI adoption or any change management improvement adoption, right? If you're going to wait for the 18 months to deploy AI in your company, enterprise-wise, it's too late. Your competition has already done it. They're ahead of you 20 years.
Yep. And really, it bites you twice, because not only is it late and irrelevant, but you're wasting resources into making a decision that is no longer, doesn't even matter. So that's an excellent point, Mudassir. We got so many questions, so little time. Anthony, I'm interested in a key point. I don't think you've made it yet. I think it came in our pre-show conversations where you see AI flattening brands towards sameness. And what I want to ask you is, with all the investments that we're making, not just in supply chain, but in global business, into AI and automation and the like, how can leaders leverage these technologies without optimizing away the very things that make us, in terms of our organizations and our cultures and our products, unique? Your thoughts, Anthony.
This is a really great question. So thank you. With AI, there's so many great strengths to it. So have no doubt that I'm a fan of implementing it. The hardest part about AI, especially with media and paid media across the board, is every company is going to have access to the same technology, the same data, the same signals, the same insight, same supply chain, because you could be tightening up that supply chain all the way through and optimizing it all the way through. Everyone's going to have that same base core information. So if you stick with Starbucks making a bag of coffee for $5 and sell it for $15, every coffee manufacturer is going to have the same information, how to do it and how to make it great. When we talked about Chewy early on, we talked about that moment that matters and what makes you distinct as a brand is going to be the strongest part. If you go back to the foundation of who you are as a company and as a brand is how do you remain distinct? And the best way to do that is like working out what is your foundation and why you matter. And it's really important to think about that and only pull out one other case example. And this one that all of us should have heard about is what's happened to Nike really since about 2021. Since then, they've lost 64% of their market cap. Billions and millions, tens of billions of dollars have disappeared from Nike's market cap. They brought in a person who was very non-sport and non-Nike, and they moved out of brick and mortar retail. They took retail away, the touchy feel of Nike. They moved away from sport. They moved towards faster fashion. They moved towards celebrities. And they forgot why they were in business in the first place. And Nike doesn't sell shoes. They don't sell shirts. They sell motivation. At the core of Nike, what Nike is, when you look at the original principles that Bill Bellman built, they're a motivational brand. And they believe in motivation. They're the ones that help you get out of bed in the morning, you know, lace up your jogging shoes and turn left or turn right or go off to hot yoga or something like that. That's where Nike belongs. And they've forgotten that core, that foundation of who they are.
Well, Anthony, we could talk about Nike is a fascinating brand to where they've been, where they are, and where they're headed. It really is fascinating business-wise, brand-wise, you name it. All right, Mudassir, react really quickly. I've got three more questions, I think, maybe 37 more questions for Anthony. Yeah, react really quick.
One more example I would give to substantiate the point is the example of Costco, right? It's the experience. They lose money on every $1.50, you know, hot dog. And the CEO say, I'm going to lose millions, but that has not changed. Because that hot dog $1.50, it's not food. It's basically the human connection of their members who comes in and pay the membership fees and the experience. So when they leave, the feel good, I save money on the hot dog. Such a small things. And on the counter of that, they make billions in the membership. So is the cash already covered? Brilliant example.
Excellent. You know, me and Amanda can eat there for, I think, less than $9. I wouldn't suggest doing it every night, folks, but it's a cheap date. All right. So let me ask you this. So you've worked with brands that consistently have reinvented themselves, Anthony. You touched on a couple, I think, already. What's one of the biggest misconceptions that leaders have about innovation? And also in this landscape where, sure, there's some very successful transformations, right? But there's also a lot of transformation efforts that fail left and right. Your thoughts, Anthony?
Yeah, a couple of things. And I would hate to be a public CEO at the moment. The housing market is flat. Interest rates are really high. Every quarter, you got to report to the market of what's going on. Innovation is was not an overnight thing. Innovation is a year process, takes a long time. And even CIOs, the chief innovation officers, they turn their jobs really quickly. They're not in a job for a long time, like 3 to 4 years. And so with that is like, how do you really keep the innovation going through the company? I believe that a great company needs mechanisms and a great company has consistent mechanisms to keep the progress moving forward. And they can take a variety of thoughts. The other one is I'm not a fan of values. You know, if the three of us started a company today, I could probably assume that one value would be assume best intent, or one value would be about building trust. And they're pretty mundane. But when you work out the foundation of your company, I believe that principles hold to your foundation, and values are something that are forced upon people. Is here's how you should act, or here's how you behave. We're telling employees how to act and how to behave. And that's not really fair on them either. I'm a big fan of principles that help innovation move forward. And Amazon has like 16 or 18 principles that hold them true to their foundations as a company.
All right. So Mudassir, react. I heard a lot about foundational values and how we've got to protect that focus and that adhesion to those foundational values. It's easy, especially given growth and success and lots more leaders and team members joining. It's easy for those things to get diluted. And that's where some companies will lose their way. But what'd you hear there from Anthony Mudassir?
the values, again, is a vague text, but it's, I really mold the culture, which that's the leader's job, right? Is to stabilize the culture of whatever they want to create. So take an example of Costco, it's customer service. They pay more than anybody else to do that. But I have a comment on innovation and the lack of it, right? Which Anthony also touched upon. It's down to even the bigger dilemma, the bigger organization is, they don't know. So innovation is basically two types. Product-driven innovation like Apple, you create something like iPod, which people know does not exist, and then the iPhone. So that's product-driven. And the second is the problem-led innovation. I think companies don't know which one works for them.
Mm.
If you ask any chief engineer officer, you're going to say, well, I'm going to hear what salespeople say. I'm like, but what are you? What's your thinking of, are you a product-driven innovation leader or you are a customer problem-driven innovation leader? Lack of clarity is a problem.
Put us there.
Yeah, it was a really good point. I remember when Amazon first started printing advertising messages on the outside of a box. And it's a really big deal now. It's gone through the Minions and it's gone through a lot of Acura and car dealerships. And Jeremy, and she was the person that really helped drive this forward. She was never held back from doing it. She was encouraged to do it. And she had to work out, like, when people were picking off a line in an Amazon warehouse, at what point the boxes would come through. So how they got involved in areas like that. And she did a very stunning job of owning it from all the way through, and was a single-threaded leadership that takes it through. But the problem with a lot of innovation now, especially with AI, is too many leaders trying to own it. And when you don't have that single-threaded leadership and the org structure is not right, and therefore the culture is not right, because I don't know who I report to this week, nothing's going to move forward.
I'll tell you what, we could have three or four more hours and still be scratching the tip of the iceberg on some of these topics. Let's do this. I want to make sure we get a practical starting point for folks out there, Anthony, folks that are willing to lean into one of your key messages here today, leaning into that strategic discomfort that really drives the book, drives your perspective, it drives success of what you've seen firsthand in industry. Where can these folks start? Maybe they've been sticking in their comfortability lanes, but now they're ready to lean into the uncomfortability. Where can they start?
So we've spoken about org, so I'm going to stick with org for a second. Is I'm a big fan of restacking a team every 12 months. And I'm not talking about rolling people out. I'm not talking about anything like that. I'm talking about asking people to do a slightly different job or do their job in a slightly different way than before. And that little bit of restlessness is a little bit of learning. And it's like me fishing in a fishing hole or a dam. It's like I had to learn to do it a different way. And read something a different way and read the water a different way. And restacking a team is very similar to that. From a creative point of view, there's generally like three types of creative. There's a designer, there's an art director, and there's a writer. And quite often, a writer might do a bit of art direction or a designer might do a bit of writing. And it's a great way to shake things up a little bit. And I would say the same. If someone is in IT, could they do a procurement job just to learn a little bit and helps open up their mind?
Yep.
And I'm a huge fan of those little restacks that make a big difference.
Anthony, that's very practical. I love that advice. Very practical. I completely agree with it. Mudassir, you're shaking your head. Would you agree with his advice there?
100% agree. And I double down on this. To drive why there's the adoption store is change management. And okay, Adcar is one of the famous change management philosophy. It's awareness, desire, knowledge. I'm running a learning platform for the last 4.5 years. And I can tell you this, there is 100 times more money available for the technology, but literally no money available for awareness, desire, and knowledge. And actually, that needs to happen first if you want ROI on your $100 million.
Well said. Lots of actionable advice from both of y'all here today. Maybe y'all need to hit the road, have a global road show with Mudassir and Anthony. We'll see. As we start to wrap the conversation, I want to again encourage folks, check out Eat the Donkey, Why Great Companies Embrace Discomfort. Look at that quote up at the top. It comes from Rob Schwartz. He says, quote, a manifesto against average, read it at your own risk, end quote. That is quite an endorsement. So folks, go check it out. All right, really quick. Also, one other thing to check out and encourage folks. We started a new blog post series with our friends at Journal of Business Logistics. They basically have taken big research papers and have boiled it down into bite-sized chunks that we're calling the manager's cut. So go check out the first one in this series, When Safety Technologies Backfire, and How Can Managers Prevent It All? So go check that out, folks, at the Resource Hub. All right. I want to make sure folks know how to connect with you both. Of course, you know how to get the book. You also know how to tap into Mudassir's powerful Sensei platform. We've included links for both of that. Anthony, I know you're doing keynotes left and right. You're in demand, my friend. That's a good way to be. But folks want to reach out to you, questions about the book, or they want to interview you, or set you up for a keynote at their event, you name it. How can folks track you down, Anthony?
Thanks, Scott. There's really two ways. One is I'm very active on LinkedIn, so that's a very simple and straightforward way. Or anthonyreeves.co. It's a .co, not .com. I hesitated too long and someone else stole .com. So anthonyreeves.co is also another great way to reach out to me.
Outstanding. Appreciate that. And Tricia's going to be dropping these links right there. And Dr. Mudassir Ahmed, I'll tell you what, it's a pleasure to collaborate with you. It was great to see you in person in Chicago at the Project 44 event, and prior to that at Manifest, I think, briefly at Manifest. But really quick, Anthony, and to everyone out there, I interviewed a dozen folks or so, business leaders, supply chain leaders in Chicago, and they all sat in on Mudassir's certification training. I think it was all focused on AI. And I'm telling you, Mudassir, to a person, they were raving about what they received and what you delivered. So for whatever that's worth, that carries a lot of weight with me. So keep up the great work. How can folks track you down, Mudassir?
Well, thank you very much for the endorsement. You send me a personal email. That means a lot in showing to all my friends and family. Thank you very much. As I said, you're the real OG influencer. So I mean it. Right. So just like LinkedIn, I'm the most active there. So just Google it, Dr. Mudassir Ahmed. You'll find me. Send me a DM. I'll take a lot of time replying. Or just drop me an email at mudassir@stmdojo.com.
Outstanding. And folks, Trisha's had her hands full. We've got Mudassir's LinkedIn right there. We've got Anthony's URL, anthonyreeves.co right there. We also have Anthony on LinkedIn. And we also have the link. Go check out Sensei. Give it a spin. Give Mudassir some feedback. Feedback is a blessing, folks. Feedback is a blessing. All right. Want to thank everybody again. Anthony Reeves, VP Global Brand and Creative at Kohler, also a published author. Go get your copy of Eat the Donkey. Thanks for being here, Anthony.
Thank you, Scott. Mudassir, it's a pleasure to meet you. Thank you so much.
We'll have you back soon. And my fantastic co-host, I'll tell you, we need a couple hours with Dr. Mudassir Ahmed, who's doing some really cool things at SCM Dojo. Thanks for being here, Mudassir.
Thank you for being, inviting me. It's lovely to be with you, especially Anthony. Very impressive. Thank you very much.
Big thanks to our friends, APL Logistics. Folks, be sure to connect with them at aplogistics.com. Of course, also big thanks to Man and Tricia behind the scenes for helping us with all the production out there. Most importantly, big thanks to our global audience for being here with us. I know we couldn't hit everybody's comment and question, but really, y'all keep it coming. Folks, you know your homework. And Anthony and Mudassir brought it here today. Take just one thing. You can take two, great. Three, even better. But take one thing you heard here today from Anthony and Mudassir. Share it with your team. Put it into practice. Do something with it. Deeds, not words. That's how we're going to keep transforming global supply chain, global business, and leave no one behind. And with that said, on behalf of the entire Supply Chain Now team, Scott Luton challenges you, do good, give forward, be the change that's needed. And we'll see you next time right back here on Supply Chain Now. Thanks, everybody.
Join the Supply Chain Now community for more supply chain perspectives, news, and innovation. Check out supplychainnow.com, subscribe to Supply Chain Now on YouTube, and follow and listen to Supply Chain Now wherever you get your podcasts.